Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Tom Clark, is that you?
Hey.
Don't worry, I can edit this out. I'm gonna give me a 10-second pause. I'm going to hit the music and introduce the show, and we're off and running on a lively debate, okay?
Okay.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the global headquarters of the 401k Study Group. Today is August the 17th, 2016, and I'm thrilled to be back on the radio today, especially because I have my very, very good friend, Mr. Tom Clark, of counsel at the Wagner Law Group, ERISA genius extraordinaire, on the line to talk about a topic that I've been seeing a lot of. So before I go too far, Tom, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Chuck. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. For those of you who don't know, Tom's been on the show several times. His shows are the most popular ones that we do, largely because he covers topics that are sticky, that can be uncomfortable, and more importantly, are important for advisors and their potential clients and business partners to know about. So, Tom, I know you've been very busy in light of all of the wonderful regulations that have been going on, all of the lawsuits popping up, and I've been noticing a trend, and that trend over the last few months revolves around advisors reevaluating their business relationships. They've been asking, should I go RIA or not? Now, my phone calls are purely anecdotal. I don't have tons of data on them. But as someone who actually helps pull the levers and push the buttons, are you seeing this as well?
So, Chuck, let me start off by saying that we as a firm, we're revenue model neutral, right? We have clients who are fee-only. We have clients who are not fee-only. The rule itself, on its surface, is revenue model neutral. It both supports fee-only advisors. It also supports non-fee-only advisors, meaning those who take commissions or variable compensation. However, all that being said, there definitely is an undercurrent, if you will, in the industry right now where people are debating with this idea, do I just give up? Do I give up the business model I've had if I'm not fee-only? Do I give it up and just go fee-only, give in to the DOL, and just go in that direction? I think people are struggling with that. Because of the nature of the way the regulation is written, in that it's, hey, if you're fee-only, it's kind of easy to comply. If you're not fee-only, it's way more difficult to comply. And so people are struggling with those issues.
So, Tom, the client base at Wagner, at the Wagner Law Group, you know, you represent the big entities like the broker-dealers all the way down to the small guys and gals like me. And when you look at what these broker-dealers are willing to spend, or what they're going to need to spend to comply with the conflict of interest rule, it's not $1 million, it's not $5 million, it's $15 million. And I don't necessarily know where all of that money is going, but why do you think an advisor would leave one of these large entities with this built-in infrastructure to go out and do it on their own? Because it's not as simple as throwing up a website, filling out two pieces of paper, and you're an RIA, is it? So two questions, really. One, I understand they're second-guessing their model. Why do you think they're leaving? And secondly, it can be a pretty prickly path going RIA when you've had sort of all of this back office. So can you sort of address those two questions for me in whichever fashion you like.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, Chuck. So let's just say we both have seen some of the articles out there where entities are claiming to spend, are going to be spending $1 million a month or 10 or 15, $20 million or whatever total on the new rule. In all honesty, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it when, if you could itemize that, if you could like go to the grocery store and get your printed off receipt and look and see that, you're kind of counting that towards it, you're counting that towards it. I mean, what would fall into that bill? Do I wish the lawyers were getting all of that money? Sure. Throw whatever it is you're going to throw at me right now. But no, the lawyers are not getting, I think, even the vast majority of that. Much of that money is being spent on technology solutions to be able to track a lot of the information that's required as part of the disclosures. I think a lot of that money the overall money that's being spent is on new tools for advisors, training advisors. Frankly, I wouldn't be surprised, again, without saying the line items, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of firms if you have 20 people on conference calls every week for the last 52 weeks, that in and of itself costs money. And so without a doubt, this is going to cost people to comply. So the answer, your question is, why would someone leave? Well, here's the kind of experience I'm seeing on the ground with ground level advisors. Forget our representation of the institutions for a moment. But what I'm seeing and hearing from my friends and my colleagues and these ground level advisors, the one in the trenches with plan sponsors, I'm seeing that some are being well communicated to by their financial institutions, and I'll use that phrase broadly, whatever that may be. They've gotten letters. They know what's happening. Maybe they don't have the final answers yet. I don't think anyone of large ilk has final answers yet. But at least they've been communicated to. They've been attending conferences. They've had, people like me and some of my other colleagues travel around the country and speak to them. People at least know that their financial institutions are on it. On the other end of the spectrum, I have talked to more than a handful of advisors who, and when I say advisors, I mean just normal FA business model regardless, that haven't heard a peep out of their financial institutions. I recently made a presentation to a group, of a small introducing BD, and they hadn't heard anything from anybody higher up the food chain. They had no idea what was going on, and their compliance department was struggling to figure out where it was going. So if I were an advisor, and at this point I'm looking at, my institution is supporting me, or my institution is not supporting me. My institution knows what's going on, my institution doesn't know what's going on. Putting all that aside, let's just say you find yourself out there in the desert and you're not a level fee, RIA fee-only advisor, you've been taking commissions. And you get this idea where, I want to go there. Or maybe I'm somebody within a smaller organization and I'm the only fee-only guy. Right, or gal, and I'm the only one with 401k business, or I'm really the only one who cares about any of this. And you say, well, if I'm by myself in an island, what kind of money am I going to spend to have to get through this? And the answer is kind of staggering, right? For your average person, let's say you just had a 5-person firm, and the other 4 people were doing insurance and financial planning, whatever. You're the only person working with 401k plans and doing rollovers or whatever. I mean, maybe that hypothetical isn't reality, but to go out and purchase agreements and policies and go through this and have the attorney go through the buckets of business with you and categorize things and look at all the forms of compensation, I mean, you're talking tens of thousands of dollars, at minimum $10,000 and up. Is it worth it? So we sort of have this this interesting phenomenon going on that I see where everyone is rushing to the best of their ability to figure out how to comply with the rule, except – at the institutional level, except the rubber meets the road with the advisors. And I don't know, as we move forward towards April 10th of next year, that everyone will be moving in lockstep, right? It might be like one of those giant bird movements you'll see up in the sky, right, where hopefully everybody's going in the right direction, but I have a feeling some people will start making their own left-hand turns, and this will get more interesting before it gets clarified.
Well, Tom, thanks for bringing up one thing the folks that know me and know when I do this show, it's my favorite thing, but I always take notes. And in this case, no news is not good news. So if you're an advisor and part of your business relationship is with an organization that is supposed to be helping you shepherd your way through this, and you haven't heard from them, that is not good news. That is probably something
right.
that might be a little bit unsettling. Here's
right.
the other
so,
thing which I
and so I have two and I have two responses to that, Chuck. I have two responses to that. Number one, start asking. Start rapping on doors, sending emails, making phone calls. Find out who's in charge of this project and find out what the status is, right? Don't expect final answers. No one has final answers yet, right? They're still in the planning phase. They're still in the implementation phase. They're still in the, you know, trying to wrap our arms around triage stage. But at least you know if you start making phone calls and you find out somebody is there. The other thing that I'm honestly offering to people is people are calling me up. We're talking about all this. They're saying, you know, they're getting a bid for me as to how much work is involved in doing this. Let's say they're a small shop. And I say to them, I got to be honest with you. You're going to spend all this money. Fine. Maybe that makes sense to you. But does it make sense to maybe switch organizations? And so without naming names, without trying to cause trouble, I mean, we've been helping advisors move the practices and anonymously shopping and going out and basically doing RFPs for a new home. You know, trying to help advisors land in the best place they possibly can.
A, I did not know you were doing that, and B, who better to do it for you than somebody who actually understands and who's working for the right side of the fence in this case. You know, you're working on behalf of the advisor because you're understanding what they're trying to do and you're trying to match a home. But, Tom, this is going to be a loaded question. Isn't it too late to move? I mean, if you haven't done this, if you haven't either aligned yourself with an organization that's going to be able to get you where you need to be, is it too late? I mean, is there enough time to move
no.
a block of business?
No, it's not too late. It's not too late. There's still time. I mean, these rules don't become effective until April of next year. There's still time for the big behemoths and the larger financial institutions to put their solutions in place. But if you're starting to think about this in January or February, then it's going to be too late. Because as of next April, if you're not in compliance one way or the other, either you're not in compliance with the new rule or you're not in compliance with the grandfathering provision, which, mind you, the grandfathering provision is just full of landmines. One of my favorite things to hear is people, I'll just won't give any more advice and we'll just grandfather everything. Okay. Well, to use the grandfathering provision, you still have to make an affirmative a conclusion that the compensation you're receiving is reasonable. So even not doing anything requires you to do something. So by January, February, March next year, it's going to be too late. And at that point, April 10th, if you don't want to commit a prohibited transaction under the new rule, you can't accept another dollar of compensation until you figure it out.
So it in essence, it was a loaded question. I mean, my view is from the view of an advisor. You know, the last time we made a business decision change like this, it took us a year to decide. Not because we were slow, but because every time we've done this, and we've done it three times, you know, there are always things you uncover after you get there. And you can't have all of the variables unveiled, but you can have a large number of them. And secondarily, from an advisor's point of view, making a transition, whether it's from broker-dealer to broker-dealer or, in this case, possibly broker-dealer to totally independent RIA, no broker-dealer affiliation at all, advisors in general just aren't the fastest acting because this particular thing is excruciatingly painful. You lose clients. You can't place clients. You got to answer all of the questions over and over again, so it's hard. So for an advisor that's considering doing this, and like I said, I don't ever want to give away anybody's secret sauce, if you're considering making a move and you've decided that the RIA route is the best thing to do, what's the process for doing that? Because since we did our first show together 2 years ago, it was develop a relationship with an ERISA attorney before you or your clients need one. You might need one now. So walk folks through how the best way is to if they're going to do this RIA thing, what's the best way for them to work their way through it and a general outline of the considerations, just top of your head, that they should be looking at before they sort of sign on the dotted line and scuttle the old ship?
Well, I think it largely depends on what your original book of business looks like, right? If you just have 401k clients, you just don't happen to be fee-only, You know, that probably will be more straightforward than if you have varying shades of gray of a wealth management practice built in with a 401k practice, built in with insurance, and built in with God knows what, right? Your starting place is going to be what your book of business looks like. You're then going to go to, well, what do I want my book of business to look like in the future, right? This business I want to be a fiduciary on, this business I don't want to be a fiduciary on. I'm going to drop. I mean, I have clients who are doing the exact opposites of each other. I have one client who is in the process of selling their wealth management business, and they're doubling down on 401k. And this happens to be a fee-only advisor on the front end. But then I have other fee-only advisors who are in the process of doubling down on their wealth management business, and they want to get in, and they're hiring financial planners, and they want to double down under the new rollover rules because they feel that based on the mousetrap they've built, they can be more successful. So, you know, what's interesting here is that it's got to be driven by business needs, business wants, but then influenced by compliance, but then also influenced by wherever you land, how are they changing too, right? Because as you're falling through the sky hoping to land on that platform may adjust in the process as well. I've been playing a lot of Mario Brothers with my four-year-old recently. So in my mind, I'm, making, video game metaphors here. But, you know, you're floating through the sky thinking you're going to land on the thing, and boom, that thing comes out and gets you. So for the advisor, again, look at your business. Look at what you want your business to be in the future. And then, yeah, I guess the self-serving answer is it's time to retain an attorney or a consultant or someone to help you walk through this process to figure out who's out there and who's doing what, or just start making a lot of phone calls on your own. Figure out what the advisory firms are doing, what kind of tools are being implemented to support the kind of business you want. Starting yesterday would be better than starting tomorrow. Let's just say that on this process, if this is where your heart and mind are, that you think your current home is not the right place.
I think it's interesting, Tom, that you mentioned that you've got clients that are doing the exact opposite of each other. And thank you for bringing that up, because these are some of the conversations that I've been having with my advisor peers in the industry for the last 4 or 5 months. You know, Chuck, we've built a tremendous wealth management business, but I'm really excited about the opportunity in 401k, but the other three partners aren't. They think, as you said, that the IRA rollovers are really going to be where they can make a difference based on their existing business model. So the 401k may get squeezed out of that shop. Even if they've got 10, 15 plans, they're going to be looking to offload that. So you are seeing clients, meaning your clients, my advisor peers, who are actively pursuing buyers of retirement plan practices because of just that reason, as
absolutely.
Opposed to the advisor that's trying to shed their wealth management business. And I think that's a really interesting comparison, how two, albeit educated, sophisticated, successful business people can look at the same exact thing and see two totally different opportunities. And then I've got –
absolutely.
You know,
it's about core competencies. It's about core competencies and, frankly, what you want to do, right? And sometimes it can even be beyond compensation. It can simply be a matter of what you're good at or what you like doing. Right. I mean, as all the advisors out there navigate their own careers, do they enjoy working more with individuals? Do they more enjoy working more with businesses and institutions and committees and boards of fiduciaries? I mean, it's two completely different experiences. So much of, I think, the decision making can at the end of the day, I don't like to see the cart lead the horse. I don't like to see the compliance and regulations drive people's decision making rather than, you know, business needs and customer needs and supply and demand. At my core, I'm still a capitalist. You know, I still love my undergrad economics degree, right? So at the end of the day, I think primarily this needs to be business decision, business driven, and let the compliance aspect of it come second, although equally as important, right? But to me, these advisors, this is kind of a nice opportunity, nice in quotations, a nice opportunity to maybe reevaluate where your business, right? Do I want to go in this direction? Do I want to go in that direction? Who do I want to be when I grow up?
I think it's important, you know, a lot of people flock to the retirement plan space for certain reasons, and other folks flock to the wealth management. And for me, there couldn't be any more of a difference between what I enjoy doing versus what I would much rather go get a root canal for. So I think it's really important that, I mean, honest to goodness, you know, in 2008, I'm watching the omnibus bill pass, and I've got a puke bucket next to my desk going, I don't think I ever want another wealth management client again in my life. And I think that's not because they don't need the help. It's because it's just not for me. It's just a different set of circumstances. And as you've always said with ERISA, it's all facts and circumstances. I firmly embrace the advisors that want to fill that role, and I think it's massively needed, and hopefully we get better people and more people acting in their clients' best interest and embracing, you know, either side of the equation. And you know, I know I told you I only would ever keep you for 20 minutes, but we're coming up on 30. So it's important to have a relationship with an ERISA attorney before you need one. I can't tell you. I don't have a crystal ball. Tom may have one in his office, but he doesn't ever share the lottery numbers with me about how this is going to play out 3, 5, 7, 10 years from now. But what I can tell you is, regulation and legislation is never going to stop. I don't know what the next shoe to drop will be. I don't think Tom does either. But for your benefit, your client's benefit, and your business benefit, reach out and make a – it doesn't have to be Tom, although he is a pretty dang good choice if you ask me.
But there's many good choices out there. There's many good choices out there. Many of our competitors are – our friendly competitors that I have tons of respect for. Just call someone, right? Call someone with demonstrated knowledge and demonstrated experience who has been thinking about this every day and Sunday and can help guide you. So said simply, don't go it alone, right? For the same reason you convince your clients to hire you, financial advisors out there, because of your ability to help them navigate the wild, same thing here. Find someone to help you.
That's an important part. For those of you who want to reach to Tom, find him on LinkedIn, Thomas Clark, JDLLM. You can find him on Twitter. He's got his own blog. Tom is a tremendous resource. He's very accessible. He speaks all over the country. I know that Tom and I will be at the XL 401k event in Las Vegas at the early part of October.
I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yep, great event, probably one of the best events I've been to in the last 5 years. Tom's going to be speaking there on a variety of ERISA topics, plus his travel hacking. For those of you who don't know, Tom fancies himself a very successful travel hacker. But reach out, follow him on Twitter. Tom's a lawyer, so he's busy doing lawyer stuff, so he might not tweet or write as much as he used to, but when he does, it's important that you read it, and it's important that you follow him for when he does write. So, Tom, I want to thank you, as always, for being on the show today. Very interesting topic, very timely, and I think that you're very gracious in letting advisors know that it doesn't necessarily have to be you, but it's got to be somebody. So thank you very much for being
on. That's right. All right, thanks, Chuck. Talk to you soon.
All right, have a good day. Thanks, Tom.